I would like to introduce the first speaker, Lori J.W. from the Rise and Shine Group of NA in the Northeast area of NA.
Thank you. Okay, I'm Lori. I'm an addict.
Hi, Lori.
And I'd like to thank the Unity Retreat, the Laurel Mountain Highland Unity Retreat, for asking me to speak, especially on a tradition that's really helpful to me. And it keeps things in perspective for me. It helps. I have a very strong and big personality, so it helps protect me from me, and it helps protect the group from me. So traditions are very important. It got me into my books, which I love our literature. So I thank Megan for chairing this meeting and for you guys being here. So I appreciate that. I'm going to read a little bit just to frame this, especially the autonomy piece of it. I just want to read the last paragraph of It Works How and Why, Tradition 7. Our anonymity, our integrity, our faith, our sense of simplicity, our acceptance of responsibility, our gratitude together. All these things spell freedom. Those are the spiritual principles that are at work in the seventh tradition, some of them. But the ones that are highlighted in our literature. By encouraging our group to pay its own way, the seventh tradition gives our group the freedom to share its recovery as it sees fit, the autonomy. Not obligated to outside contributors. Further, it gives our group the freedom that comes from inner strength, the strength that develops through applying spiritual principles, which are the steps that are embodied in the steps of Narcotics Anonymous. Those things help us to develop the spiritual principles. And the strength that develops through applying those spiritual principles by making the decision to become fully self-supporting, our NA group assures that it will always have the resources it needs to survive and continue fulfilling its primary purpose. And it all goes back to our primary purpose, to carry the message to the addict who still suffers. And work backwards here. I liked when it said in here that in understanding the principles underlying the seventh tradition, practical simplicity walks hand in hand with our faith in a higher power. So long as we take our direction from that power, which is the essence of the group conscience, that's where you invite a loving God into the business meeting and deal with the issues that concern the money. And that's a whole nother thing with us. But so long as we take our direction from that power, our needs are met. Likewise, the decision to decline outside contributions, meeting the group's needs from the group's own resources, is based firmly in faith. So long as our group remains devoted to fulfilling its primary purpose, its needs are met. That's a beautiful line. I love that. So long as our group remains devoted to fulfilling its primary purpose, its needs are met. That's like a promise to me. I love that. I think that's beautiful. I talked to my sponsor on my way up here, and we were talking about, and I told her, you know, what I was sharing on in the essence of it. And she says, you know, if somebody's willing us to give us $5, we take it. As addicts, we have to learn how to be self-supporting. not self-sufficient, because we are reliant upon each other for what we do. We need each other for what we do. But I'm talking about being self-supporting. In the basic text, let me go to the... I love our literature. Why not use it? So I'm going to read some more. And hopefully, I was kind of hoping Adam would go first, because I've had a rough day, and if I can, I'll get to it. My thoughts were to come off with my day, but my motives were out of order. So I'm glad that I got redirected and finally got through the tradition in both the basic text and It Works How and Why. In that last paragraph, then my higher power spoke to me and said, you go in another direction. We're not going to get off on your complaints for the day. We're going to get on with, because I dealt with a lot of self-support issues, but we'll get to that. We're going to get in where we need to be with the spiritual principles here. So, tradition 7, and this is very short. It's only a page in a couple sentences. Every NA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Being self-supporting is an important part of our new way of life. I was a taker and a thief. That's it. That's what I did. That's how I survived in active addiction. I took other people's things. And I wasn't a professional or anything like that, like I told myself. But at any rate, that's what I did. For the individual, this is usually quite a change. In our addiction, we were dependent upon people, places, and things. We looked to them to support us and supply the things that we found lacking in ourselves. My answer was always, if I could get this thing, if I could get this person, if this hookup, all that. As recovering addicts, we find that we are still dependent, but our dependence has shifted from the things around us to a loving God and the inner strength we get in our relationship with Him. And that's what I got to really believe. I got to make sure that that relationship is solid. And there are no strings attached to that in terms of money. I can't buy my way into that relationship. Even though I tried to abuse that relationship too. If you only do this one more thing for me. If you just let me find something. If you get me out of this one. So I did abuse that relationship as well, but it's never been reciprocated. I've never been abused by the loving God that I found through the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. We, who were unable to function as human beings, now find that anything is possible of us. Dreams that we gave up long ago can now become realities. Addicts as a group have been a burden to society. That's what Judge Daniel Ackerman told me when I was sitting in Westmoreland County Courthouse. He said, you know what? You're a societal wart. He said, you are a menace to society. He said, and your using days are over. Now that was in, when did I go there? February of 91. And I didn't get clean until, well, no. February of 91, I went to rehab. And I heard about the fact that I was sick, not bad, that I had a disease called addiction. And it was, it changed my life. It changed my life. But still, I didn't follow all the directions they gave me. I didn't follow my prescription they gave me upon discharge. So consequently, I had a relapse. But May 30th of 1991 is my clean date. So that was that's my surrender date. In NA, our groups not only stand on their own, but demand the right to do so. And our groups are comprised of members. The individual members make up the group. So we stand on our own and we demand the right to do so. That's the autonomy. That's the part where I'm going to say, I'm not going to rely on this agency or that agency or this group or that group. Not even a place that we meet to pay our bills and to meet our needs. Because there is an integrity about paying your own way. Money has always been a problem for us. We could never find enough to support ourselves and our habits. I lost the ability to see money as currency in my act of addiction. I only saw what it could buy me in terms of drugs. That's it. It had no value. All it equaled is, this is what this should look like for this particular bill. We worked, stole, conned, begged, and sold ourselves. There was never enough money to fill the emptiness inside. In our recovery, money is often still a problem. I'm going to say that one more time. In our recovery, money is often still a problem. We need money to run our group. There is rent to pay, supplies and literature to buy. We take a collection in our meetings to cover these expenses, and whatever is left goes to support our services and to further our primary purpose. And that's however that particular group hears in the group conscience that they're supposed to do that. I don't know about how your group does it. I know how my group does it, and it's done through the group conscience. Unfortunately, there is little left once a group pays its way. Sometimes members who can afford it give a little extra to help. Sometimes a committee is formed to put on an activity to raise funds. These efforts help, and without them, we could not have come this far. I'm the activities chair in my area as well. And so and really what that's about is an added attraction. It's not really about having fundraisers. It's about just having enough to pay for the things that are going to help attract the addict who still suffers or those who are already in the fellowship. And so hopefully we are being effective in that. I think sometimes groups, and I know my sponsor that passed away, actually she's been gone a little over 2 years now, always her home group always did an inventory of itself every January. They'd spend the entire month inventorying how are we carrying out the primary purpose. And I think it would be wise, and I think I'm going to suggest to our activity subcommittee to do the same, to inventory. How are we being effective in what we're trying to do? So, okay. These efforts help, and without them, we could not have come this far. NA services remain in need of money. And even though it is sometimes frustrating, it can get very frustrating, we really would not have it any other way. We know the price would be too high. We all have to pull together. We all have to pull together. And in pulling together, we learn that we really are part of something greater than ourselves. That's the essence of Together We Can. That's the essence of we. That's it. That's the embodiment of that. Our policy concerning money is clearly stated. We decline any outside contributions. Our fellowship is completely self-supporting. We accept no funding, endowments, loans, and or gifts. My husband and I have a nonprofit, and it's interesting. We have a recovery center, as a matter of fact. And I only say that to say that we have a lot of meetings that meet at the center. And we run into the simple things that don't use another group's cups. Don't use the other group's coffee and creamer and sugar. Buy your own. Buy your own. And if you don't have enough, figure it somehow. Bring it from home. Bring it from home. Don't start, because that causes a whole lot of controversy. They're still in our cups. They took our coffee. And as a facilitator of the place, that's just a bunch of ugly to have to deal with. You know, whereas if you just stick to the traditions, everything goes so much smoother. Okay, so we're not, a Rise and Shine group of Narcotics Anonymous is not putting out no grant proposals, okay? We are only going to stick with ourselves, okay? For us and by us, that's what we're going to do. Everything has its price, regardless of intent, whether the price is money, promises, concessions, special recognition, endorsements, or favors. It's too high for us. Even if those who would help us could guarantee no strings, we still would not accept their aid. And that's a temptation. That's a temptation for an addict. If you say, oh, no, I'm going to give you this, no strings attached. That takes discipline and integrity not to accept it, especially if nobody's going to know about it. Integrity is what you do when no one's looking. So the spiritual principle at work in this tradition is, one of them is integrity. It's tempting. It is. It's tempting. When somebody says, well, 12-step program, we want to send you a free case of coffee. Oh, no, because you got us endorsing what coffee you're sending us. We'll buy it. We'll buy it. And I always tell them, we have to be good stewards of what we get. So we'll get what's on sale. That's the way we operate. We get what's on sale. So we're always on the lookout and coupons and everything else. Okay, we cannot, oh, now I like this one right here. We cannot afford to let our members contribute more than their fair share. My. We have found that the price paid by our groups is disunity and controversy. We will not put our freedom on the line. And I had that experience. I was trying to explain to them up there at our campsite. We go through this every year. Now, let me see if I'm the only one this happened. Are we the only group? Let me take me. Oh, help me. Anyway, I'm going to say this because I got to get freed up too. And I want to hear from people maybe after the meeting. Are we the only ones that go through this? Now, we got 24, 30 people up there. We had meetings prior to this event, as we do with every camp out that we gather together. We love each other madly. We just are wild about each other. And so we do these lists. You're going to bring this, you're going to bring this, you're going to bring this. And then we have guests that come, you know. They definitely missed the meeting. They definitely missed the meeting. And so we get these little quarrels going. And so this time we had it where, okay, we had two meetings. And because that was the first mistake, we should have all been at one meeting. So then we get up there and I made a statement. As a predecessor, next time we are not going to have this disunity. We have three different people shopping, and we got 25 pounds of potato salad. We got we're all bringing the same thing. Let's all get on one accord about this. Well, I was saying it. I have a loud voice. And so one of the members was very objected greatly to it. And so, of course, I'm not going to be quiet. I'm going to have my say. And this is scaring people. They don't want to get nothing. Now, let me tell you something. I got the biggest heart. I've cooked professionally. Cooking ain't nothing. You can have anything you want. But I'm talking about fairness. I'm talking about everybody needs to contribute. And so then they told me I was disturbing the atmosphere of recovery. Uh-oh. Boy, oh boy. Now, I was mad. I was angry. But I had to sit down and take a look at it. And let me share this and I'm done. This is the part I played. Thank God for the literature because it spoke to it in here. It spoke to it in here. And let me see if I can find that little piece where I said I'm guilty. Because the bottom line is I need to be looking at myself and my part in this. Talked about, I'm going to just get to the gist of it. when it says about everybody contributing, it doesn't mean one or two members give most. And so because, here's where the conflict came in for me. I got a huge deep freezer as big as this table at home. And it stays stocked to the top. So I said, I'll bring this, I'll bring that chicken, I'll bring burgers, I'll bring dogs. Now mind you, meat's expensive. I put myself out there to do that. Then I'm going to have my birdcage rattle when you don't like what I have to say about everybody contributing. But my part was is, and I got to back off of, just do my part. I did too much. I did too much, and I'm guilty. I did more of what I wanted than what was needed. And it talks about that in this tradition. That if we are having problems, we need to look, are we doing more of what we want or what we need? So my part is, because I was going to tell you about everybody else's problems, but God brought it back to me. And Laurie, you need to draw it back. You're not the star of the show. Yeah, everybody knows you can cook. Everybody knows you got plenty. Plenty is my drug of choice. More and more than you and all that. So what I've decided is that I have to be fair to me as well. Fairness is not just what you bring to the table. It's me maybe refraining from bringing so much. And it talks about that sometimes if people have more resources that they can contribute sometimes a little bit more, but not all the time. You know what you get out of that? A false sense of your own importance.
Yep. And a resentment.
Ego. And a resentment. And a resentment. Because now I want you to match what I'm bringing. Power and control. Now I want you to match what I'm bringing. And they said, Lori, we go through this every time. We go through this every time. I said, well, and I have these meetings. Call for these meetings so that we can have this all ironed out. But in the meantime, I'm going to be the star. But that's, you know, something that I have to discipline myself not to do. My intention may be good, but if it results in controversy, it hasn't done any good. And so I have, and it's just amazing that I got this particular tradition, and that when I went into it, and I even told him, I'm going to talk about that down there, the self-support, and we can always pull out something to present in our defense. You know, the literature is beautiful, but read the whole thing. What came before it and what comes after it? Because once I got into it, it works out. I said, oh, I don't want them to read that part. You understand? You got to take the whole thing. You got to take it in its context. And what I have learned is that, and I don't like being wrong. I hate that. And then what we do at the end of our camp out, we go around and we evaluate. We make a big circle and we all give our input on different things. And I said, and I already had it planned that tomorrow I'm going to say, I'm not sorry for anything I said. I already had it planned, rehearsed in my mind. But I'm going to let God tell me what to say because I got to stay out the way. And I can learn too. I need to learn. But God has dealt with me using this tradition. I'm grateful that I had the opportunity. And I'm also grateful that God put a gate before my mouth. That I didn't let anything out that shouldn't have come out. You know, I probably told you a little too much anyway, but I did have to free myself so I can go back up there with a new demeanor. And Narcotics Anonymous always does that for me. Anytime I go to a meeting, I leave better. So I'm grateful for the opportunity, and that's all I have to share.
Thank you.
Okay, I would like to introduce the second speaker, Adam C. from the Principals First Group of NA in the BVANA area.
Yeah.
Or am I supposed to say that all? I don't know.
BVANA, Beaver Valley area.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Sure, hey, how are you? Hi, guys, I'm Adam. I'm an addict.
Hi, Adam.
I think Laura did a really good job of summing up what the literature has to say about autonomy and self-sufficiency, or being self-supporting and the seven tradition. I think I'm going to speak a little more about what this has meant in my own life. So I'll start this with a confession. For a long time, I thought the traditions were just the really long, boring reading that didn't have a whole lot to do with me. Mm-hmm. Felt like kind of housekeeping stuff, you know, like who is an addict? Okay, I can get down with that. But the traditions, I check my phone, tune out, you know, it's long. Then you get that reader who like really cares what it says and reads it very deliberately and considered. And I'm pulling my hair out. Could you speed this up? Oh my God, I want to get to the meeting. Because it's really important that I, you know, when I was new, like I needed the meeting to start so I could share off topic, take you hostage for a half hour,
yeah.
You know, share where I was at. So the traditions were just getting in the way of that. And so I didn't get it, you know, and it talks about in literature, you know, that our understanding of traditions comes slowly over a period of time, you know. I was just trying to save my life when I got here. And so the traditions were just not on the radar at that point. But the seventh tradition was the first tradition where I realized, oh, this is what you're talking about when you say apply these principles in all our affairs. See, what happened was, when I got clean, well, let me back up before that. I was never self-supporting, right? Like, I stayed at my parents' house way too long. And what's the rule at your parents' house? As long as I'm paying the bills, you do what I tell you. You come in by the time I tell you. You come in, and I'm a grown-ass man. Well, I'm paying your grown-ass bills, and so you're going to listen to my rules, right? And so that was, like, just the first example of that. And then I was married. I'm married, couple kids, and my disease had progressed to the point where I couldn't work, couldn't go to school. Because I did that stuff for a long time, you know? I did that stuff for a long time, and I thought I was one of those, you know, that lie of the functional addict, that, you know, I still did a lot of those things. I did them poorly, but I did them. But it got to the point, that last period of time, man, I couldn't do any of it. And so any money that did come in was not going to bills and feeding the family and feeding my kids. It was going in my arm. You know? It was going up in smoke. And you know, and so my father-in-law had to step in because he wasn't going to let his daughter starve and he wasn't going to let his grandkids starve. So he paid the bills. And at the time, I wasn't even ashamed. I wasn't even ashamed. Like, okay, good. I'm glad somebody's paying the bills. That takes that off my plate. Because at that point in my addiction, I was just failing at life on all levels. And so, I had accepted on a deep level that I was going to die using. And it was just a matter of time. And I was at a point where I was just kind of hoping for it. I was just hoping for it because I couldn't do much more. And I was just causing more damage than anything else. And I had these two innocent babies born into this disease who didn't ask for any of this. You know, wondering why daddy was locked in the bathroom all the time and wouldn't come out and play. Mm-hmm. And so I was grateful that he was paying the bills. In fact, I was trying to make up bills that didn't exist so that he would send money. You know what I mean? And he got wise to it and he wanted to see invoices. And so when I got clean, though, that shame starts. I mean, you lose that anesthetic, you lose that numbing agent, and you start taking a look at how you've really been living. Like, I have a good father. Like, all my stuff is in spite of my parents. I can't point to my parents for any of it, right? And my father has always done what men do. And I didn't. I was not manning up. I couldn't even pay for the food to feed my children at this point. And so I got clean. And it took a while to get back on my feet, right? But here's the thing. I was living in a house that was on my in-law's property, right? And still wasn't self-supporting. And that was supposed to just last for a year or two. It went on a lot longer than that. And we paid some bills, we didn't pay them all. And we just kind of got in the habit of not paying those bills. And here's the thing about that. You're beholden to whoever's paying those bills. So when my father-in-law calls, I do not have a choice in the matter. Mm-hmm. You tell me to jump, how high, man? Because he's paying the bills. And that's not freedom. That's the opposite of freedom. Now, he's not an evil guy. He's not a bad guy. But he's still... I had handed over control of my life to somebody else. Just like I had done to the drug. And I will tell you that this was not a quick process for me. I celebrated 10 years yesterday. I did not do that for the applause, but I'm grateful for it. But I will tell you that only very recently do I feel like I have shed those chains. And now when I go help him, it's because I want to. It's because I'm making an amends. It's not because I have to. That's freedom. Because there are times where I tell him, no, I'm not coming to fix your computer at midnight. Go to bed. I'll see you tomorrow. There was a time I didn't get to say that. Because that silence that held on the phone, there was a lot of shame in that silence. A lot of guilt in that silence. Okay. I'll be right there. My wife and I bought our first house last year. And it's hard. It's terrifying. It's expensive. I finally settled in and quit walking around the house thinking that somebody was going to come and take it. You know? Like, it's mine. It is my house. And there's no... I mean, that feeling... of it's not about the stuff. It's not about, like, we don't live in a mansion, but it's ours. And I don't owe anybody for it. I owe a bank, but that's my loan. You know, I'm not beholden to anybody, but with that comes a lot of responsibility. I need to be self-supporting. I need, you know, it's on me. And I have a lot of kids. I got 5 kids. And on purpose. We finally figured out what's causing it. We're done. We're good. We're done. But it has become so important to me. You know, I used to be afraid that my kids, that I was going to be their dad who died. That's who I was going to be to them. That was going to be my legacy. I wasn't terribly concerned about my legacy when I was getting high, but that was what it was going to be. I was going to be the dead parent. And how sad that would have been. I had 2 kids when I got clean. And I got 3 recovery babies. And now these kids have grown up in this. This is just our life. A friend messaged me yesterday. How do you talk to your kids about recovery? I said, how do you talk to kids about life, man? This is just what we do. I came home yesterday. I said it was an emotional day. 10 years is pretty crazy, man. And especially for somebody who was convinced that they were going to die using. a decade. And I came home. My little girl made me a banner. Hmm. Said, happy 10 years. Mm-hmm. And because this is what they do. This is what their daddy does, you know? And I'm so grateful that they are watching me man up. Like, I didn't know what all went into this. Like, I grew up with a dad who paid the bills, and he just went to work, and he didn't think about it. It was never an issue. And, like, I always had a roof over my head. I always had, like, I was that kid where, like, I thought toilet paper grew on trees. Like, I didn't know. It was like a fairy who came in the middle of the night and stocked all this stuff. It was just always there. Like, I remember the first time I got my apartment. I'm like, I'm out of toothpaste. What do I do? I called my mom. Like, what do I do? I said, go buy some more. That was shocking to me. You know, I wasn't self-supporting. My mother always did like my laundry. My wife had no idea what she was in for when she met me. I was in my 20s learning how to do laundry. Mm. But anyhow, so I have experienced no freedom in this area, and I've experienced freedom, and I can tell you that freedom is the preferable state to be in, right? Mm-hmm. And so as far as NA goes, my sponsor has always talked to me about consider the alternative. You know, what if we weren't self-supporting? You know? Imagine the temptation if Nike or Nabisco came in and said, we're going to give you guys $100 million a year. Well, you'd go, wow, we could help a lot of people. We could help a lot of people with that money. You could open a lot of, you know, you could open a lot of centers. We could have, you know, meetings wouldn't have to. But we are then beholden to. Mm-hmm. And those favors are going to come calling. They're going to come calling. It's going to distract us from our primary purpose. There is a cost, always, even if we don't see it right away. And here's the thing about the traditions, right? Like, the thing that I used to just tune out and check my phone during because it was so boring is so critical that if we don't follow them, people die. People die. And that's not a dramatic statement. If we lose sight of our primary purpose, if all of a sudden we're concerned about shareholders, you know, instead of the newcomer walking through the door, people will die. I was at an anniversary meeting, I was going to say recently, but I feel like it's actually probably been a couple years. And before the meeting started, it was in church basement, like many of our meetings are, and the priest wanted to say a couple words. Well, the home group didn't really know what to do. I think they were a little caught off guard. It's okay. Well, I'm sure this guy's a wonderful pastor, but he then proceeded to give a sales pitch because there were a lot of people in that room. And he said, here's what we do. Here's what we have to offer. And then we were in this position where there's an entire room of 100 addicts hearing a sales pitch on this church. Now, that's a problem. Because number one, me as a newcomer, when I came in, if I walk into an NA meeting and there's a priest talking, we got a problem. Like, I want nothing. I knew this was a religious program. I knew it, right? So that's a problem there. But this is why we pay rent. Because we pay rent. Like, if I pay my landlord, I'm paying you, and that means you don't get to just walk in. I am paying you for my freedom. That's what that rent does. That rent protects us. And so that kind of had some shockwaves of like, whoa, that's not okay. That's not okay. And I think, you know, they dealt with it however they had to deal with it. But that's just one example of, you know, if, because, I mean, I don't know if you guys, I mean, I've had the experience when the church will go, no, don't give us money. It's okay. No, we are giving you money because you are not coming in here and talking before the meeting. You know, it's nothing against the church. It's nothing against the pastor. It's not against that. It's that it distracts us from our primary purpose. So these things have real implications. So it's just funny to me that the thing that I once thought was just so like, oh God, can we please, come on, let's go, move it along. Now I see it's so vital and so critical. I mean, personal recovery depends on NAD unity, right? And what was the other line that I've had swimming in my head all day? I'm a blank on it. I wish I had the traditions in front of me. Well, obviously I wasn't supposed to talk about it if I can't remember it. But so anyhow, I don't really think I have much more. I just really, it was important to me to bring up how important this was to me in my personal life, and how grateful I was for that first jarring experience of, oh, that's what you guys are talking about. Mm. This is critically important stuff, both for the group and for me as an individual. So I thank you so much to the committee for asking me to speak. It's such an honor to come up here and somebody think I may have something to say. And there's not enough bug spray in the world, by the way, for this. It's crazy. Oh my God, I feel like I've been spraying it all day. Anyhow, well, I love you guys. Thank you so much. That's all I got.